Support made possible by Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic's annual series of crop insurance and grain marketing meetings are currently underway across the Midwest. Go to www.sfarmmarketing to register for a meeting near you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 13th day of February, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Dan Zwicker's out of the office today. And a bit later in the program, Mike Tenura will be here as usual. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago to take a look at the forecast with growing regions across the planet. And we'll discuss NREC, the Nutrient Research Education Council. Conference that's taking place on South Campus today on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, here are the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. March corn today 3.5 lower, the May down 2.5, and November, rather December, at 3.92, a penny lower. It finished at 3.92 again. Soybeans in the March at 8.96 at a quarter, 3.75 lower. July at 9.18, up 3.25, and November up 2.5. That's at 9.23 3/4. That March contract, by the way, was up 3.75, not down 3.75. Bean oil 31 cents lower. The bean meal up 20 cents. Wheat futures were off 4.5 cents. Live cattle futures finished the day about 50 to 60 cents higher, and the feeders were up around $1.77.5. Lean hogs for the day about 30 cents higher. We're now joined by Matt Bennett at agmarket.net to take a look at this marketplace and talk a little bit about what's happened over the last week or so. Kind of an interesting week since the WASI report came out. Tell me a little bit about what you've been thinking.
Well, you know, the market basically has been pretty dead on corn. I mean, up a little bit, down a little bit, you know, and then you look at the bean market, and it's actually had several days in a row of, small gains, but regardless, we've seemed to have bottomed out for the time being, which is sure nice to see. Now, whether we're going to see a larger scale rally or not, I think remains to be seen. Might be tough to do going right into, Brazilian harvest for first crop soybeans, but at the same time, I feel like beans probably had gotten weak enough for the time being, and, I saw a little bit of support finally come in.
Well, so there's the support there. Corn didn't manage to follow through today. Did that surprise you?
You know, I think the market's paying pretty close attention to, obviously, the news coming out of China with coronavirus. You know, one day you get positive news, the next day you hear news that maybe isn't as positive. And I think folks are certainly concerned about demand implications. And then, you know, you got to ask yourself, how frustrated is the trade that, it appears we're going to have to be patient as far as Chinese purchases go whenever it comes to feed grains. I think there's a lot of folks that thought, hey, once this thing gets signed, they're going to start buying feed grains. You know, obviously we knew they were going to probably buy soybeans, but, feed grains have been kind of a new flavor. And I think there's a lot of folks excited about that. And they're just, frustrated that that's not going to happen right away. I don't even know how long we're going to have to wait if they're going to buy feed grains. But I think if they would, it certainly would have a very positive impact on our markets.
Yeah, I have a secondary question related to China and their purchases, AFS and the coronavirus. Have we been able to watch very closely what's been purchased from Brazil? And if not so much, does that kick the purchase out of Brazil back into what would normally be the U.S. export time for soybeans to China?
You know, I think that ultimately, you're hearing about Chinese purchases of South American beans. It's frustrating the trade, because if the Chinese have said that they're going to have to back off a little bit on phase one commitments due to coronavirus, then you would think that they wouldn't be buying beans off of anybody. But, so I guess ultimately I think, what coronavirus has done is probably given them, in their mind, a little bit of leeway. I think, whenever you look at it from the U.S. perspective, you've still got 1.4 billion people to feed, and there's got to be a significant amount of demand returning in here. It's just a matter of whether they're going to, completely comply with the agreements that they made with us, or if they're going to try to massage the agreement a little bit.
What are you hearing about the condition of corn in farmers' bins at this time?
Well, it's not good. We've talked to several growers that didn't think that they had issues, with their corn. And obviously, most of the corn got dried going into the bin this year. not all of it, but any, what I've been telling folks, if you really want to hold on to some corn for the summer time frame, let's say we have another late spring, which it appears is very possible. If you have another late spring, good quality corn late in the summer could be worth a lot of money. Problem is, you got to make sure you're going to be able to get it there. And so the most likely candidate for corn that would actually be able to make it all the way till summer would be corn you didn't have to dry all the way down, because the corn that, you know, was dried down from, you know, 23% to 30% is certainly going to be tougher to keep. We've heard a lot of folks having issues with fines, with, you know, corn picking up moisture. It's just not going to be easy. It's very similar to 2009 crop, and we had a lot of issues there. A lot of corn didn't end up being worth a darn whenever it came out of the bin. So we've been telling folks not only be super careful whenever you're getting in the bin, but we got to monitor them very, very closely this year.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it and look forward to having you at the Beef House on the third day of March.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate you having me on.
Indeed. That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net and will be one of 16, 17 analysts that join us over at the Beef House on the third day of March. That's the first Tuesday of the month. You can, too, for the all-day Ag Outlook. The cost is just $30, and you can buy the tickets online now at willag.org, willag.org, or by dialing this number. It's 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065, regular business hours each and every business day of the year. To buy those tickets or online at willag.org for the all-day Ag Outlook. Matt will be there along with most of our regular on-air analysts, including Eric Snodgrass, to take a look at the weather forecast. Steve Mulberger will be there to talk about the future of agriculture, and Gary Schnitke will take up the crop insurance and ARC and PLC decisions. Hope that you can join us too. Well, today the Nutrient Research Education Council has been meeting on the south part of campus at the Eye Hotel, and Daniel Schaefer is here. He's been involved in some of the research that Gary Schnitke is working on along with the Illinois Corn Growers Association. This is called Precision Conservation Management, or PCM. You can look that up if you'd like. You'll find it on the website. Thank you so much for being with us today. A lot being talked about during the morning sessions today as it relates to nitrogen usage and how that comes out of fields, and why. Did you see anything that interests you that also works into the kind of the PCM, or precision conservation management practices, that farmers are using and that you're encouraging?
Good thing about PCM, it brings economics into the whole cover crop story, and that's what farmers are really looking for. We're looking for the economics involved in this. And we just heard Lowell Gentry talk about how many nitrates are coming actually out of our tile systems from soybean residue. And we need to find a way to sequester that. And you talk to Shalmar Armstrong, who just talked about cereal rye being a great sequester of nitrates. But if you put it ahead of corn, then you have a possibility of some injury to the crop. So you got to try and balance all that. And I think that's one of the places PCM is coming in and showing if we can have high yields and economic use of the cover crops is very important to a farmer.
So Lowell Gentry, a researcher here in the Department of Crop Sciences on the University of Illinois campus. You probably peaked a few years there.
Yeah.
That Mr. Gentry said, you know what, looks like there are losses coming out of soybean. Can you explain what it is he told you today?
Yeah, it's due to the immobilization. So you've got a crop like soybeans, especially soybean leaves, and the residue has a carbon to nitrogen ratio of 15 to 1. We take a look at corn stalks, and that's 30 to 1. So 30 to 1 is immobilization, 15 to 1 is net mineralization, and that breakdown of nitrate happened so quickly this past year that as we went into harvest, we got plenty of rains, we started moving the nitrates right out of the bean stubble. The corn stalks, the corn utilized all the nitrogen that was applied, so there's very little nitrates there. Actually, the cereal rye actually was starved for nitrates in the corn stalks. And the challenge is, and it's going to be a challenge, to find the cover crop that can utilize that 16 pounds of N that was lost in the bean stubble and take that up and hold it and then give it back to the crop. That is not detrimental to the cash crop.
to summarize this in a very simple way, what's left over from the crop on the field is holding the nitrogen in the residue. And because there's more residue for corn, it's simply there, and less for soybeans, and the soybean has less in it as well. That nitrogen is actually free to move out.
The nitrogen that is in the soybean residue moves out quicker than the residue from the corn stalks. The corn stalks don't break down as fast as what the soybean residue does. So that's where the difference is coming in. And especially in a year of a high soybean yield, you got a lot more residue, it's a fragile residue that breaks down quicker and gives back that nitrate that's in that residue. Corn stalks, you're going to immobilize the nitrogen in the stalks because you got a higher carbon to nitrogen ratio. So that's why we're actually seeing in this past year, in 2018, more nitrate coming out of the soybean stubble than we did in the corn stalks.
So rotation matters in this case.
Rotation matters. I mean, you go back to the old days when we used to take a soybean credit. Well, there was some nitrogen left over from the soybean residue that broke down rather quickly. But with all the tiling we've got, we actually lose that nitrogen. Now we've got to find a way to sequester that nitrogen and keep it in the field by way of a cover crop, and that's your best way to keep that nitrogen and not lose that. If you over fertilize in corn and you have nitrogen left over, that's a different story. But following the MRTN N rates, we're getting the nitrogen rates down to where they need to be, and we're not leaving a lot of nitrogen after a corn crop. But yet the soybean plant is through the residue, the crop residue is leaving some nitrogen. And you heard Gentry talk about, it's not about over-fertilization now, it's more about the whole complex of mineralization, crop residue, and fertilization, and timing of fertilization is key.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
That's Dan Schaefer. He's the Director of Nutrient Stewardship for the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association. Earlier today, I was at NREC, the Nutrient Research Education Council event held at the I Hotel, and Jean Payne is with us here as well. She is the director, executive director at IFCA, the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association. It must be satisfying to you to be here thinking about how the industry representative works into an environmental side of farming and nutrient and the ability or hope to control some of that runoff over time. It was a vision that took place nearly a decade ago.
We actually drafted the legislation that created NREC, IFCA did. Back when we knew Illinois was going to face these challenges, Todd, we saw it coming, and we knew we had no money to do any of the research. We needed to invigorate that again, and we definitely needed to bridge a gap with the environmental community, because as was said in the program today, 10 years ago, the focus was on we are going to regulate fertilizer, and that's going to be the answer to the water quality issues. And we knew that that wasn't really going to be the answer, but we had to prove it to a lot of people, including the environmental community. So today, sitting in this meeting, 7 years after the NREC legislation passed, and when we segregated that money from the big coffers at the state of Illinois so we could always ensure that it would be safe for us to use, you see the results of some of this research. You see people from the environmental community sitting in on this meeting with the farmers and with the fertilizer dealers and with the university people, all collaboratively working together to solve this complex problem. So for me and for IFCA and our board who had the vision to create NREC and fight for those dollars, it's very satisfying to be here today.
What does it mean going forward as it relates to the regulatory process for fertilizer, if anything?
I think We always knew that water quality wasn't always directly tied to fertilizer use or farmers, the thought that they were over-fertilizing. Now we have data and science from Illinois fields with a wide array of researchers, not just one or two researchers, but, you know, 7, 8, 9 different researchers doing different things, but all kind of seeing the same sort of result. So when it comes to a public policy standpoint, we in agriculture always say we want to be regulated by science. If we're going to be regulated, it needs to be science-driven. So NREC has provided the science, and I think what it really means is we have to look at improving water quality in a much bigger way. There is no silver bullet. If anything that we've learned, there is no one thing you can do to solve the problem. It's going to take a a systematic approach. And our goal now is to find systematic approaches that are manageable for the growers, profitable for the farmers, and able to be delivered and supported by the agribusiness industry.
What pitfalls do you see yet?
Well, I think just complacency is always a pitfall, right? We've heard today that our soils produce their own nitrogen that can be lost in the environment. So naturally occurring nitrogen can be lost. So the pitfall is, how do we do this in a profitable way? We can do a lot of things to reduce nutrient losses, but if it's not profitable for the grower, it's not going to work. And I'm not a believer that we can keep subsidizing changes in practices. It has to pay for itself. So we, over the next 10 years, have got to figure out how to make this all profitable for the growers.
The pitfall from the farmer's perspective, maybe, or some grower's perspective, if it's happening anyway, and I'm doing my job, then why should I go ahead and do something else? But they really are responsible for the stewardship of both the land and the water.
Yes, land and water, because water is a big part of this in Illinois. Our climatologist has been telling us that we're going to have increased precipitation. So that means we have more water flushing through our system all the time. So how do we manage soil? How do we manage crops? How do we manage water? And how do we be accountable for it? And to me, transparency has been so important, because the moment that the ag industry decided to be transparent about our challenges with crop production and water quality was the moment the environmental community came to the table with us. And I hope that can also hold true for what happens with the livestock industry, what happens with all kinds of issues in agriculture. It doesn't have to be just corn and soybean production. We need to continue to be transparent, be truthful about the challenges that we face and the profitability challenges that we face too. And I think we'll find that we'll have more people wanting to help us than fight us on this, but transparency and a commitment to keep moving forward and not be complacent about it, it's going to be very important.
Thanks so much, Gene.
You're welcome, Todd.
Gene Payne is the Executive Director of the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association. We're now joined by Mike Tenuri. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago on this Thursday to take a look at the Global Weather Agricultural Region's forecast. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us today.
Great being here, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Let's start in South America. How would you categorize the weather in Argentina for the season?
Well, Argentina's looking pretty ideal. It's going to be very cool over the next couple of weeks, and it even was pretty cool this week. So cool weather on corn and soybeans is generally a good thing when they're in their sensitive phases of development, which they are now. So everything is looking fine there. We also have more rain on the way over the next 2 days, but especially Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And because of that, we just don't have a whole lot of concerns in Argentina. It was even moist over the last 30 to 60 days. So just not really a whole lot happening there.
In Brazil, it seems like, depending on the week, sometimes it's dry, sometimes it's wet. Does that continue?
That basically does continue. It'll be drier than normal over the next 5 to 7 days in most of Brazil, and then we get back into one of these wet periods in the central and north. And that will basically allow a couple of different things to happen. The first thing is that corn and soybean harvesting will advance in these central and northern areas over the next week because of the lack of heavy rainfall. But then once we get into next week, it will start to rain again, and then that will start to aid some of those newly planted crops, because keep in mind, there's a first crop corn in Brazil and a second crop corn in Brazil. The first crop is starting to be harvested, and the second crop is being planted. And with soybeans, there's only one soybean crop, but that crop is now being harvested too. So pretty nice weather for harvesting over the next week, then a little bit wetter than ideal. But some of those crops that want some rain will get some.
Earlier in the week, I talked to an elevator operator, actually a purchaser in North Dakota, asking about the condition of the crop that's still standing. Of course, it has deteriorated, though in his area, he said about half the crop was up. Farmers are trying to get through it. Depends on snowfall amounts a great deal. He says the ground, while frozen, there are still places because things are so saturated that the combines are still falling through. I'm going to go with that the cold weather they've been having in the last few days probably solved that part of the problem, though I suspect they won't be out when it's this cold. Can you tell me about some of the conditions coming up for them, and then work your way through the rest of the Corn Belt?
Well, certainly, and those are some great points. Keep in mind that this morning across most of the eastern Dakotas, low temperatures were between minus 15 and minus 25 degrees, and that's not including the wind chill. So it was extremely cold, and that certainly wiped out that problem that you talked about. But you need to keep in mind that this cold blast that is moving through is not going to last for very long. It's kind of the theme we've been dealing with all winter, which is where we get a little cold shot here or there, then all of a sudden it goes away and is very mild compared to historical normals. And that's pretty much the way it's going to be going forward. Yes, we will be colder than we have been relative to normal, but the cold periods that do happen don't stick around for too long. But the other problem they have in the Dakotas, and this is one of the things we'll start thinking about more in March and maybe even April, is that all the snow that they had earlier in the winter, it's not melting. It's basically sitting there out in the fields like you talked about. And eventually what's going to happen is that the snow is going to melt in the Dakotas, and that will lead to a flood situation. This does happen on occasion, and this will certainly be one of those springs. And we'd really like to see that snow melt earlier than later, because if we can melt it all, say, right now, and then get all the flooding out of the way, then everything will start looking pretty nice for planting that begins in April and in May. But if it doesn't warm up a lot, and that snowpack lingers and we get another snowstorm here or there over the next few weeks, well, then this story is going to continue through March and right into April. And that's where you have to start thinking more about how much of the next crop will end up getting planted. It's still too early to worry a whole lot about it, but we can see that the snowpack is going to linger in some fashion all the way into the end of the month. So this will be a story in March, and it will make weather later in March important, because we like to see temperatures get a lot warmer than, of course, where they are today in the minus 20s. But if we can get into the 40s and 50s on a couple of days, that'll eat away at that pretty quickly and then start to end this situation. But other than that, Todd, you asked about what else is happening across the U.S. The only other thing we're keeping an eye on is the wet story that's developing in the southern Corn Belt and in the Delta, especially the Mississippi River area from just south of Cairo all the way through Memphis and then down toward New Orleans. We had a lot of rain over the last few days. There's more rain on the way early next week, and more than likely some additional rains beyond that. Fields are saturated in this area. River levels are high. And if we keep putting rain on top of that area, it's going to stay pretty wet through the end of the month. And that's certainly what we think is going to happen.
Kenny, thanks so much. And just as you pointed out, when I was talking to the corn buyer there in central part of North Dakota, he mentioned a couple of things related to the issues you discussed, that they were concerned that if things didn't change very much, that the saturation in the soils and the melt and the rainfall could really cause them to get backed up into the growing season, just trying to get the corn out. And the other thing I thought was interesting is that when they do go in to get the corn, they can't get everything because there's just too much snow in parts of the field, especially where the snow can blow in from the road. So they're getting center parts of the field, but maybe not everything else. Hey, thanks so much for keeping tabs on all of this. It sure helps out a lot.
Yeah, you're welcome, Todd. And we'll just keep on keeping an eye on it and see how things go. But, you know, the big story in the Dakotas is the faster we can melt this, the better things are going to be in the future. So we just want to get that snow out of the way.
Mike Tenor is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget to visit our website. The address there is WILLAG.org. There you can buy your tickets for the all-day agricultural outlook. That's coming up really quickly now. It's the third day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. That's on the Illinois-Indiana border. Just inside that border, exit 4. It's really simple and easy to get to off of Interstate 74. I hope you can join us for the day. The cost is just $30 for that. You get rolling coffee in the morning, your Beef House lunch at the noon hour, and 17 analysts throughout the day to talk about the commodity markets and the future of agriculture. I'm Todd Gleason.